All right. Hey there, this is Bram Kanstein and you're listening to Bitcoin for Millennials. Together with my guests on this podcast, I go on a journey to discover how our current financial system works, why it's flawed, and why Bitcoin is the most relevant technology that you, my fellow millennials, should understand and adopt. In this episode, I'm joined by Rajat Soni. He's a certified financial advisor with 10 years of finance industry experience, dealing with hundreds of clients on a personal level. As a personal finance educator and content creator, he simplifies complicated concepts with weekly insights on personal finance, investing, and Bitcoin with his audience of over 200,000 followers across Instagram, X, Substack, and LinkedIn. I'm super excited to talk with him, as I think people who are like classically schooled in finance, as you are, I assume, you know, who now embrace Bitcoin should be applauded for, you know, this turnaround. And I think we'll definitely talk about that. And I'm happy to welcome you here, man.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'm a huge fan of your podcast. I'm constantly listening to it. I haven't listened to any of the couple recent episodes, but I've been consistently listening over the last couple months or so. Love your content.
Nice, man. Well, happy to hear. Thanks for coming on. Love your tweet. So that's great. And yeah, as mentioned, like what I love about Bitcoin is and especially about making a podcast and talking to all these different types of people with all these different types of backgrounds, you know, who now see Bitcoin and are active in Bitcoin. Like I love these people who are like traders for 30 years on Wall Street, you know, who really profit from a broken system and are now fully into Bitcoin. Like it takes a lot of personal challenges to, you know, review your worldview and then see it in a different way. And I see that with you as well, right? Like you have a long personal finance background. All your tweets are about Bitcoin, basically, which is amazing. And I just want to start by asking you, how did you first become interested in finance and eventually Bitcoin?
So not too long ago, I was actually in a very bad financial position. I had tons of debt. I didn't take care of my finances. I was spending so much money just on entertainment, takeout. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing with my money, right? Maybe 6-7 years ago this was. And then I started learning about something called FIRE, financial independent retired early. This was after I finished this was during when I was doing my chartered financial analyst. So during the designation, during all my education, I always made the assumption that the US dollar would be the only currency, right? You don't think of it from a different perspective. The perspective is that the US dollar is the best form of money. It will always be around. There's no way for it to go away. There's no way for it to collapse. It's always going to be here, right? So I've been posting about personal finance, about investing, about stocks, about real estate, all that stuff for about 3 years. And in that time, I learned more about money, I learned more about Bitcoin, and I learned more about just the financial system than I did during my entire CFA designation, like the time when I was studying for my CFA, right? And that's insane to think about, right? I mean, most people who do that CFA designation,
it's a recurring team also.
Sorry?
It's a recurring team also across financially educated people, actually.
That's exactly what it is, right? I mean, in the CFA, we just assume that no other asset will ever take over. We can have real estate, we can have stocks, we can have all that stuff, but we can't have anything that will replace money, right? So when I started posting about personal finance, about investing, I started getting a lot of questions. Hey, I don't like investing in stocks because this company is doing this, or real estate is almost like, in my opinion, I mean, I've grown to think that real estate is almost like exploitation, right? Because you're holding something, you're offering it to someone else, and if they don't get it, they're homeless, right? If they're not willing to pay the minimum price that's available, they're homeless. So I'm just, over time, it made me think, hey, do I really want to be a part of this system? Do I really want to be thinking about things this way? I mean, when you start diving into Bitcoin, when you start putting in the work to understand how Bitcoin works, you realize that the entire financial system is designed to take money from the people who are financially illiterate. Right. If you don't understand how money works, if you keep US dollars, nobody's going to tell you, hey, this is, you're losing money. Right. I think just now in the time of social media, more people are realizing that this system is a scam. Right. It doesn't, it doesn't work the way it should. There's actually a book. I'm not sure if I can mention this, but this book,
of course,
is amazing. Yes. The Fiat Standard. Awesome. It goes through how money is created in this current system, and then it doesn't talk about Bitcoin, but Bitcoin is the same author has another book, The Bitcoin Standard. Both books are amazing. I mean, they show you the flaws of the current system and then how the new system means to fix all those flaws, right? So, I mean, in my opinion, a lot of financial advisors are going to be coming into this. A lot of financial analysts are going to be coming into this. They're realizing it. If you look on Twitter, there are more CFAs, there are more MBAs getting in on this. So,
yeah. And so, how is this current financial system then designed to profit from the illiterate or steal from us?
So what most people do today, I've done tons of one-on-one conversations with people. I've done tons of just meetings, webinars, all that stuff. And what most people do today is they save in the currency they're paid in, right?
Yeah.
So if you think about it, what that means is that they're getting paid in US dollars or they're getting paid in Canadian dollars and they're keeping those US dollars and Canadian dollars in their bank accounts. What that does over time is it gives somebody else power over you, right? So let's say, for example, if the US government wants to borrow money to do something, they're just going to get a loan, right? When they get that loan, it seems like, okay, you're not printing money to do so, but you're adding more money to the economy, right? Even if it's just if it's a loan, it doesn't matter what kind of money it is. It's demand on goods that are currently available. You can't print goods, but you can print money. Right? So when we're working for a form of money that can be printed at will, and we're saving in that form of money, I learned more from Saifedean's Bitcoin standard about this than anything else. If we save in a form of money that's constantly diluted, constantly being printed, it can be printed at will, we're going to lose all of our wealth, right? And most people are doing that. They're seeing that, hey, I'm working so much harder, I'm spending so much more time at work, I'm doing 3 jobs, and yet I still can't even make ends meet because my rent is going up, right? It doesn't matter how much I save, but my rent is going to go up. My cost of living is going to constantly increase. The price of my food is going to constantly increase. I actually went to Costco not too long ago. The same stuff that would have cost maybe $150 5-6 years ago now costs $350, $250. So how are people going to make ends meet? Their income hasn't increased by 40-50%. So that's how the system is broken, right? It constantly devalues the reward you get for labor, and it increases the value of everything else.
Yeah.
Right. So,
and would you then follow the illustration I used that before in the podcast, where, you know, if you see all the money, let's say take all the dollars that are in existence, right, and you view that as a pizza. Every time new money is created, it does not mean the pizza gets bigger. It means that the slices get smaller, right? And if you see a slice as your ownership of the amount of dollars, right? Let's say your net worth is $50,000 or something. Then what the energy that little slice is, right? That's why the pizza analogy is so good, because the pizza analogy has like calories, right? So one slice A has a certain amount of calories, but once it gets cut in half, then that one slice, you own one slice, you own $50K in dollars, basically. But the amount of energy that captures is half of the previous slice, basically. And that's why the prices of the things you want to buy, the amount of dollar units, basically, they go up, but you still buy the same thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I mean, if you really want to, if you think about it, I'm not sure how much of your audience is, how many of them are aware of stock splits? So a stock split is basically when a company share increases to a certain level. So let's say, for example, Amazon. Amazon shares were at $2,000 not too long ago. They did a 20-for-1 stock split, 20-for-1, I think it was. So basically what they did was they split each share into 20 units, right? So let's say, for example, if you do that and then the value of the company is going to stay the same, right? It's not like you have more value. You still have the same amount of value. What's being created by the company stays the same. But if you keep adding more and more shares and then you take away, let's say, for example, if somebody has one share of Amazon and if you split it into 20 shares, but then you give them 19 shares, they have less wealth. They may feel like they have more. They may feel like, oh, I went from one share to 19 shares.
In units, amount of units, yeah.
Exactly. That's what it is, right? They think they have the same number. They think they have more shares, but they actually lost value because somebody else took that one share. That 5% is gone forever, and they're never going to get it back. So.
And is it then also, Safe Dean talks a lot about value also, right? A lot of people, and of course, you talked a lot about stocks and stuff as well. And I see a lot of people also talk about stocks on Twitter, etc. They say, oh, it's gone up in value, blah, blah, blah. But they use the wrong words because it went up in price, right? It went up in the units of dollars again that you see.
It went up in nominal value.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. That's a better term. Yeah, nominal value. But that does not represent the value. And I feel that a lot of people conflate those two things, and it's also being used against them in a sense, right? That you can see, oh, the S&P 500 is doing great because its number go up also there.
Yeah.
But that does not represent the value, right? I saw a great graph, I think British HODL shared that, where you had the Nasdaq graph from, I think, 1970s or 80s or whatever the introduction was until now. Denominated in dollars, and you see eventually it goes up, it's almost all-time high or something. But when you denominate it in the M2 money supply, the amount of dollars, which is the real value, not the price, then the current point is lower than at the peak of the dot-com bubble, which is so interesting because you could easily argue that we are way further along technology-wise and that the companies that came after the dot-com bubble provided way more value within, the technology sector. But even their value, although it's provably better, got devalued because there is way more money than in 2000, basically. And that always struck me as a great illustration, but nobody looks at it in that way.
Yeah, all you see is the nominal value, right? I like to think of it as, with Bitcoin, your nominal value is going to decrease over time, but your buying power will increase, right? So if you have, let's say, for example, over 10 years, you hold one Bitcoin, you spend half a Bitcoin during that time, you'll probably end up with more buying power at the end of that 10-year period than you started with, even though you spent half of your Bitcoin, right? With real estate, with stocks, you can keep your real estate, you can keep your stocks, you can keep getting your 3-4% cash flow, but you're going to end up with a lot less real value than you began with, right? The real value is what you're referring to when you say M2 money supply. When you have those stocks in real estate, you're losing value. I actually spoke with somebody yesterday. He was saying he's in Pakistan, so he invested in real estate in Pakistan. He was saying how the value of his house dropped 30% in terms of US dollars, even though it went up in nominal figures, right? It went up from 5 million to something like 13 million or 11 million. But for him to break even, it would have had to go to 13 or 14 million. So he lost value. His nominal value went up, the price that he could sell it for. But what's the value of that, the nominal currency, when you can't spend it on anything? You can't buy anything with it.
Yeah. Exactly. So sometimes people joke, right, like, oh, in the 1960s, a bread was 10 cents and now it's $4. But that's kind of where the joke always ends. The conversation never continues after that. There's nobody who's like, well, that doesn't really make sense. I give another amount of units to buy a bread. Well, okay, or something like that. Yeah. This illiteracy, or also, it's not on purpose, of course. By the people, I mean, I took me a very long time to realize that all of the stuff that I think I knew about money was totally wrong. Like, how, where does this come from, you think?
I think it's intentional. I feel like if people started, it starts at the school level, right? If, how many personal finance classes did you take in your entire schooling career?
Zero.
Right? Yeah. Why is that? It's to keep you uninformed, right? I mean, if you start, let's say, for example, if you start, this is what happened over the last few years, over the pandemic. More people started thinking about personal finance and everything started skyrocketing in price because more people started buying rental properties because they thought, hey, I want to build wealth for the future too. My cash is doing nothing for me. So the entire system is collapsing because of that. When too many people start building wealth, when too many of the people at the bottom start trying to get to the top, the entire system starts falling apart, right? That's what we're seeing right now. Because too many people started buying houses, buying stocks, too many people started getting out of the workforce. They started being able to just live a passive life without being able to produce anything. They can keep their real estate forever if they want to, right? They can technically just keep that real estate. They can hold on to it until they're 60, 70. They can pass it on for generations, right? They don't have to spend their Bitcoin, or sorry, their real estate. They don't have to spend it. Yeah. They can keep it.
Yeah. But now you turned around, obviously, after some time. I also know a lot of people want to invest, etc. I have a friend who just bought a store with an apartment above it, which I don't know. I didn't tell him. I thought it was a bad idea, but I think it is. You know, why are real estate and stocks not a good way to build wealth anymore? I would like to say, I think some people got rich with that. You know, I think a lot of people, especially millennials who are looking for ways to build wealth, end up with these options. But I see you talk a lot about it on Twitter. Like, why is this not a good option then anymore?
I mean, I think it depends on your perspective, right? If you don't look at it from the perspective of Bitcoin, stocks and real estate are always going to be great, right? If you don't know about Bitcoin, if you don't know Bitcoin exists, stocks and real estate are always going to be the best, right? They're always going to keep returning more than you would get in a savings account. They'll always return more than inflation. In general, I think once you actually wrap your head around Bitcoin, though, you realize that stocks and real estate are not, they're not the primary asset, right? They're not prime real estate. May be something that's going to continue to increase in value, but
because that's scarce, of course.
Yeah, that's the scarcity is what factors in, right? I think if you even speak to most real estate investors. I've actually mentioned this multiple times. Real estate is going to decrease in value in terms of Bitcoin forever, right? Mm-hmm. If you speak to a lot of real estate investors, they don't realize that the reason why they even own real estate is to store value. They don't get it, right? They don't get it. They don't even think of it that way. They just think of it as, oh, I need my cash flow, right? Saying that, oh, I'm not going to invest in Bitcoin because it doesn't have cash flow is probably one of the stupidest reasons to not buy Bitcoin. And trust me, I've had that conversation with so many people. It's something that people are going to regret. They're willing to give up on 100% returns because of 2 or 3% cash flow. I mean, even if you think about it, the returns don't matter. Once you kind of do a deep dive into how money works, how Bitcoin works, you realize that this is going to fix a lot of things that we are currently dealing with, right? And it's the people who are at the bottom. A lot of the people at the bottom are the ones that are rejecting it. But they're the ones who are going to benefit the most.
Yeah. Well, what I find interesting is that when you talk about this, like, and that's also why I think that Bitcoin is a long journey to understand, because when you say, like, people don't even understand why they have real estate, they think they need the cash flow, right? And they say, oh, Bitcoin doesn't have any cash flow, so it's not interesting. But when you have real estate, you have occupied mental space, you have all your costs, you need to deal with your tenants and stuff like that, you know, maintenance costs, taxes, all these things. And so it's not an easy way to create or earn money, right? With the cash flow, of course. And so I agree that the argument that Bitcoin doesn't have any cash flow is flawed, because, well, when you have Bitcoin, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to think about your tenants. There's no cost, there's no maintenance, no property taxes, no threat of someone disowning you, or the place where the real estate is turning into a ghetto or whatever, right? But once you start going in this direction, then you automatically get to, like, yeah, that's why I said mental space or your time preference, like Safety talks about, right? It's less about earning money or investing or building wealth. It's more about almost your mental state, right? The fact that
freedom.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Because
that's,
yeah.
That's, I mean, if you even think about it, how many people are managing real estate properties full time when they could be doing something else? Right.
Exactly. Yeah. That's my point.
How much energy is being wasted? How much labor hours? How many labor hours are being wasted? Right. And when those labor hours could be going towards something that's a lot more productive, a lot more useful to society. Maybe we wouldn't be relying on people working 3 or 4 jobs to make ends meet while other people can just sit at home and do nothing. Right. Maybe that wouldn't be the case anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, 100% agree. But that's also where you kind of end up when you end up at what you mentioned in the beginning, that this owning houses, renting them out, it's kind of, I don't know which word you used, but it's predatory in a sense, right? Just because I have more than you and I can provide you with a house where the utility value of a house did not change in the past 200, 300, 400 years, right? A roof. Yeah. Roof above your head and walls for security and warmth. You know, the fact that it got financialized is, of course, a big symptom of the brokenness of the money.
Yeah. So I said it was exploitation. I actually had
exploitation.
A lot of,
yeah, that's better. Yeah,
I had a lot of I guess economists retweet me when I said that, and it was really funny because they were saying that, oh, I'm a socialist. No, I'm not. I don't care. I don't care about governments redistributing our wealth. I don't care about all that stuff. What I care about is telling people about the asset that's going to outperform everything else. The reason why I say that real estate is exploitative is because one group of people owns it. Like, let's say, okay, so if you think about it, my wife and I, we bought a pre-construction house in 2018. Since 2018, the house value has increased a certain amount. And now we can, if we wanted to, we could take the equity from the house and we can use it to buy 2 more houses, right? We could put the down.
And you did what?
We didn't do that, right? In general, if you think about it, timing is so important in this legacy financial system that you can't recover if your timing is wrong, right? There's so many memes that say, hey, my biggest mistake was, being in grade 3 when the housing crash happened, so I couldn't own real estate. Have you seen that? You've probably seen that, right? I mean,
but I love that. Yeah,
it's the truth, right? That is something. Because you're a certain age, you can't get exposure to real estate. Yeah. Most people who are, I have a couple of cousins who are around that age. Maybe they're 18 to 25. They don't even think real estate is something they can possibly buy at any age, right? They it's out of their minds. Yeah. They don't even think about it, right? So I mean, if you put it in that perspective, if Bitcoin didn't exist, these people would be slaves to the system forever.
Yeah. Well, now that you talk about it, I find it interesting because a lot of people talk about, you know, equal opportunities and stuff like that, but this is a great example of, you know, in more modern times than 20 years ago or 40 years ago, there's less equal opportunity to just have a house for the utility of having a house, not even about an investment, right? But just more moving out of your parents' house, living on your own, building a family, stuff like that. That equal opportunity is basically gone, I'd say. But yeah, nobody's absolutely really touching that, right? Because when you touch that, you touch the flawed system.
You make people angry, right? And when people see that, no, they're like, no, the system's built to make this happen. I've said before, mortgages have actually turned real. The mortgages have made the world a lot more expensive. People think, hey, now I can finance a house, I'm so much better off. But on a Bitcoin standard, people aren't going to be financing their houses. They're going to be buying them straight out. They're going to be saving for a couple years. Now you're spending 5-6 years to save for a down payment. On a Bitcoin standard, with prices going down, 5 or 6 years, you're going to be saving for a house instead of saving for a down payment. You're not going to have a mortgage because it won't be profitable, right? Yeah. Banks are going to think of it as, oh, an individual is more likely to default. And because I can't print money to make up for their default, I can't lend the money. It's not profitable for me anymore. If one out of these five people default, I lose money. Why would I lend them? Either mortgages are going to be at something like 20-25%, extremely expensive consistently, or there's going to be no mortgages. So what's that going to do? It's going to decrease demand for houses. It's going to make housing prices a lot cheaper. Like, we're seeing that right now. I've seen in quite a few instances where so I'm going to say this. I actually have my real estate license. I'm saying this as a realtor, as somebody who sells real estate for a living. And because of that, you know for a fact that I'm not lying here, right? When you look at prices for houses, a lot of people are taking $500,000, $600,000 losses, right?
Wow.
And that's in nominal value. In real value, their loss is even bigger because they have the inflation to account for as well, right? So what they're getting back is worth even less. And plus, they put in their maintenance, they put in their fees, they have to pay a fee to actually buy the house, right? All that stuff has to be taken account. It has to be accounted for, right? Sorry, I completely lost track. I was just talking about the real estate. Well, where were you?
That the real estate, the opportunity for people to actually own real estate, you know, go out, leave their parents, build a family, etc. That is actually gone. And then you mentioned that that when we would have a Bitcoin standard, that also, you know, the incentive for banks to have mortgages would go away, and that then eventually the house prices would go down to the utility value or what it's worth, perhaps except for prime real estate on the coast or something like that.
I like, if you think about it, there's people who own thousands of houses, right? I mean, there's I'm not sure if you know about him, but Grant Cardone.
I saw a video of him last week where he talked about he has a home which is empty, like a huge mansion, and he talked about, like, should I sell this for Bitcoin? And he made a great case, I think.
See, I mean, that's the thing, right? These people own thousands of houses. What's going to happen when they start selling their houses? What's going to happen when hedge funds realize that, hey, instead of buying single family homes, I should be buying Bitcoin? It's going to give me much better profits. Why would I waste my time dealing with these broke people who maybe can't even pay their rent? I mean, why would they do that, right? They don't want to. Their goal is to make as much money as possible, and Bitcoin is that way. But the thing is that because Bitcoin doesn't have that physical presence, you're not exploiting anybody, right? You're incentivized to create more real goods so that you can accumulate more Bitcoin, right? That code, the code is so valuable because of its scarcity, right? I mean, people say, oh, it's this code, it's lines of code, it has no physical presence, it's worthless. But that's the thing, that code has so much value because other people are willing to pay for it, right?
The information on your computer, people in the network confirm every 10 minutes that it's still there also.
It's like the phones on your computer, right? They don't have physical presence, but they're valuable to you because they're memories, right? This is a different kind of value. This is more monetary value. You can use it to spend on goods and services. That's what people want, right? They don't care about owning as many houses as possible. They don't care about that.
Before we jump deeper into Bitcoin, I want to go back one step when you said, you know, there's a lot of people who are experiencing, they are getting poorer despite working harder, right? People having multiple jobs who are living paycheck to paycheck. There's lots of videos on TikTok and Instagram of people, while they are sipping $6 Starbucks in their own car, are complaining about the fact that everything is so expensive. But it's interesting that, especially in this, it's kind of this confluence of where all the information is free, right? So anyone can figure out basically anything, right? And they can also share it in an easy way. The fact that we now see people share these experiences, it's really fascinating to me. Like, you see that people who, well, basically through adversity are figuring out there is something going on, you know, with the money. I find super interesting. Like, how do you view this? Like, could this be like an accelerant, like more people getting on to this? I mean, like, it's definitely not isolated, right? This experience or realization.
I agree with you. I think the internet has made it a lot more apparent that people are having trouble, right? Before the internet, how would we have figured this out, right? Most people wouldn't be able to have a voice, right? With the internet, more people are seeing that, okay, other people are in the same situation as me. It's not my fault, yeah. Right? Even that, okay, even if they're sipping on $6 coffee, for example, if you were to save $6 a month or $6 a day for a month, you'd have, what's 6 times 30? $180, right? You'd have $180. Mm-hmm. At the end of the year, you'd have $2,400, right? You wouldn't even have 20, you'd have $2,200, right?
Yep.
$2,200 saved for 10 years, $22,000. For 100 years, you have $220,000. Right now, a down payment is something like $200,000 on a house, right? It's going to take you 100 years. If you give up your coffee, it's going to take you 100 years to save for that down payment, right?
Yeah.
Instead of, most people, see, the thing is, most people don't understand that you have to buy stocks. You have to buy something more scarce than the currency that you have, because they think that that currency is the most scarce thing that you can have, right? They don't see it as,
yeah,
this currency is losing value, because we're not taught that it's losing value. Mm-hmm. Right? Once they get to that realization, a lot of these people are very smart, right? They just haven't been taught the right things.
And why do you think it's so difficult to actually realize this? I mean, there's also these memes, right, where you see like, okay, median salary in the US, let's say 40 years ago, I'm going to say like $40,000 or $36,000, right? And then it said median home, $120,000. And now it says median salary, $39,000, right? It only went up a little bit. But medium home, $450,000, yeah, or something, right? Like, I always think, well, that should be a signal for you to think like, okay, if this is really the case, I should learn about this, because this doesn't sound right, you know, that this is apparently the case. But for a lot of people, it's really difficult. And that's also, well, actually, I think one of the reasons why I started this podcast, you know, I always mention that if you are a millennial who grew up in the West, you grew up in the best time ever to grow up from any person who ever lived. So you never really had a problem money-wise, right? Well, everyone has personal problems, of course. Everyone has something. But more in general, right? Like, stuff just worked. But now when the millennials are at the point where they're starting families and want to buy a house with their spouse or whatever, have one, maybe two, sometimes three jobs and a car, and they have like the grown-up life that they always thought they would have, but now they run into a problem, right? But still, it's hard for them to grasp that in their mind. Like, how did that go for you, or what is your experience with people that you worked with?
I think so I've been posting a lot about this on Instagram. I've been posting a lot about how Bitcoin will probably solve a lot of people's problems. I've been getting a lot of pushback. A lot of people think that it's still a scam. They don't they think that the US dollar is always going to be the best currency, right? They're going based on a belief that maybe their parents held, their parents transferred over to them. Even in school, like, if you think about it, we don't really hear about anything about where money comes from. We don't hear anything about how money retains its value, why it retains its value, why it even loses value over time. We don't hear about it. Most people don't do a deep dive on that, because if you think about it, most people are busy either trying to make relationships, trying to be happy, trying to work, trying to make ends meet. They don't have time, right? I'm regularly speaking with my wife. My wife is a nurse. I'm telling her, you need to learn about Bitcoin, but it's because the work that she does is so stressful. So she's not willing to put more time into this. I mean, it's at the beginning, if you think about it, it's a very stressful topic, right? It challenges your beliefs. It's a new paradigm, right? It's like, if you're thinking, most people have grown up thinking real estate is the best way to save. Real estate is my savings account. This is a forced savings account. It's the only way for me to build wealth. It's like taking that belief out of your mind and replacing it with something completely different. People think, hey, physical is what's valuable. Bitcoin is not physical. They think, oh, you're supposed to hold your assets forever. You're supposed to hold houses forever. You don't have to hold your Bitcoin forever. You can sell your Bitcoin. You can use it to consume, right? Even a few weeks ago, maybe a couple of months ago, I did a podcast with Simply Bitcoin. I was saying, hey, at that point, I hadn't understood Bitcoin completely, right? At that point, I still thought, hey, real estate is still a great investment. But once you kind of put in the time to understand how Bitcoin works, it's very painful. Like I said in the beginning, it's very, very painful. It's going to hurt, right? It's going to challenge everything. Once you put in that time, you're going to get it. But most people don't have that time.
Yeah, I think it's most people don't have that time. I agree. I mean, it took me 10 years to really get to where I'm at right now, Bitcoin-wise. It's that, but also what I try to illustrate that I don't have a problem feeling, right? Especially in the West, where up until now, lots of stuff still worked, right? Like yesterday, I recorded with Tony Yazbek, and he's from Lebanon, and he shared how overnight he lost everything he had, right? And then he was like, okay, now I understand I have a problem. But then it's unfortunate that you need that in order to actually grasp, you know, what is going on. Like, you cannot change. It's hard for a lot of people to change themselves before they actually end up, you know, in the real big problem stage. So I also, like, I agree, it takes time, obviously, but it's also that, right? Like the it's kind of like negative forward-looking thinking, which is not really an enjoyable activity, of course, right? Yeah. So it's probably also like a human, you know, your incentive is too strong to just not think about that.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, if you can borrow money for 0% and you can buy a house and you can make 20% returns on it every single year, why wouldn't you? Right? It's the base of the system is so broken. We can create money at will. We can issue it to anybody. Banks can pretty much do whatever they want with the money supply, right? At the same time, I don't know if most people know this, but in 2020, if you look at the Federal Reserve website, they actually dropped their reserve requirement from 10% to 0%, right? Most people don't know this, right? So the reserve requirement is basically, if you put your money in a bank account, they're not going to keep all your money, right? They're going to return, they're going to lend out most of it. So that's what happened with Silicon Valley Bank. Silicon Valley Bank had a certain number of depositors who wanted to take their money out. They had lent that money to the US government, right? So most people don't see that. Most people don't see that back end. They don't care about the back end because it's complicated. I mean, when you try to learn it, it takes a lot of time to wrap your head around how things truly work, right? And those things, it's almost like it's made complicated so that most people will ignore it and they'll just trust somebody to do it for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I fully agree. I think in the EU, it's 1%. Well, not that much better.
Wow.
But yeah, people should realize that when you put money in the bank, you loan it to the bank. The bank doesn't have to hold that in cash. And when you want to withdraw an amount above a certain threshold, they will ask you questions why you want to have your money, the money that you loan to the bank. This I always try to use as like the simplest kind of like alarmist signal to say like, hey, learn about this, please. Like, because this is not my opinion. Like, it is really the case, right? This is just how it works. So when you take a risk with your job or a venture and you deliver value and you get value in return, you know, in the form of whatever the money is that you use, when you deposit it in a bank, you actually loan it out again and you run even more risk, right? Because when the bank explodes, you can think like, oh, I have my, what is it in America, FDIC insurance, right? I'll get back up to 250K, etc. But if the bank doesn't have that money and it has to come from the government, how do you think the government makes money, right? It's again from taxes from the citizens. Like, I just try to talk a lot about this as well with people, because you have to understand that that is what makes you stuck in a loop, right? In the loop in this broken system where, and that's why I want to make the jump to Bitcoin. Like, that is where Bitcoin comes in, right? It's another system. It's another system, a standalone system where once you understand that you can move from a broken system to a system that is provably working and auditable and all these things, then you are out. Like, you can do that today, you can do that right now, you know, take whatever your wealth is and you move it to that new system. So if someone sees your content and says, hey, what is Bitcoin and why should I care, what's like your reply there?
So I try to tell them that it's almost like it's an alternate economy where you have a certain amount of money and that amount of money is never going to increase. So let's say, for example, in the current system, you're working for a certain amount of money. That money can be created at will, right? The money that you have, maybe it was freshly printed a few hours ago, right? Maybe you received that money after it was printed immediately. So with Bitcoin, you know for a fact where that money came from. You know every single coin that has ever been issued was created by a miner, or it was issued to a miner who put in their time and energy to create that, right? They actually had to do something to make that coin appear. It didn't appear out of thin air. It appeared because of energy consumption. It appeared because of a time investment, right? It wouldn't have appeared otherwise. With dollars can be printed at will. They can be created immediately. So if you think about it, there's a tweet from I forgot who it's from, but it's basically why would I work for a form of money that somebody else can create at will? Right? Why yes. are we expected to work 40, 60, 80 hours a week for a form of money that our governments can just literally press a button and create more of? Right? Why are they collecting taxes from us? It sounds like a stupid question. Hey, why do governments need to collect taxes when they can create money at will? Right? Once you dive deeper into that, yes. You kind of start thinking, hey,
it sounds so absurd, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's so absurd. It's funny because I love this example. Like, people would reply to that and say like, oh, it's oversimplifying, etc. But yeah. Then you have to say like, okay, but give me the answer, right? Yeah. Like, if you can print all the money in the world, why are there poor people? You know, like it's such a stupid thing to say, but it is rooted in reality, yeah. Basically, right? Like this is, if we can give everyone money, why wouldn't we do that? The answer is because it would devalue all the other money that currently is in there, but that nobody will say.
No, that's exactly what it is, right? Well, so with Bitcoin, you can't create that money out of thin air. You can't do that. You can't, if Silicon Valley Bank collapsed and it held Bitcoin for people, the financial system would have been gone. Right? Our financial system would have, it's like FTX. FTX collapsed. Think about all the companies that the contagion went to, right? All those companies would have, it's because FTX tried to create a fractional reserve banking system with Bitcoin, but it doesn't work that way, right? When you have a true form of money, it doesn't work that way because you can't print your money, right? You can't. So all of that, I guess I'll maybe put it into a sentence. Bitcoin is a new way to transfer, account, and store for value. It's a brand new form of money that can replace every other form of money that's ever existed, right? Fiat currencies are almost a placeholder for Bitcoin.
Yeah, I love that. So what advice would you give to a millennial who's just starting to explore Bitcoin for their personal finance?
I actually spoke to my sister-in-law yesterday. She didn't really get Bitcoin. She didn't care about it. She started seeing my posts and of course she started getting more curious. So I told her yesterday, hey, buy a little bit of Bitcoin. It doesn't matter how much you get, even if you buy $100, $50 worth, whatever you're comfortable with, buy a little bit. You'll have some skin in the game and you'll start looking at it more, right? She's very smart. She knows, she's constantly sending me articles, sending her sister articles, my wife, she's sending her news articles. She's sending me just things that I wouldn't even have thought of, right? So now she's bought Bitcoin. I'm pretty sure over the next few weeks, few months, she's going to be asking me a lot of questions, right? I think the first step is buying even a tiny little bit, even if you buy $5, $10 worth, just have more than zero, right? That $5 or $10 worth in 30, 40 years is going to be worth a lot more than it's worth now, right? So the amount that she bought, it's going to be worth a lot more. But that's the thing, right? I actually created a post. I posted a thread maybe a few days ago where if you invested in the stock market, if you invested $200 a month, you'd be a millionaire after 45 years. If you did the same thing with Bitcoin, it would take you 18 years, right? You don't have to fully put everything into Bitcoin, right? But even if you put a fraction of your portfolio into Bitcoin, I think that's the way to start, even for millennials. I get it. People are worried. They don't understand it. They don't, they think it could go to zero. It can't, but it takes a lot of time to actually get to that conclusion, right? You need to be able to understand the white paper. It'll take some time, but that time is going to cost you a lot if you don't buy a little bit of Bitcoin, if you don't buy it just a little bit. I know a lot of people who have bought none. They keep putting it off. But there's others who bought. They started studying immediately because it piqued their curiosity, right? It made them think, hey, I'm putting money into this. Why don't I learn more, right? Yeah. Until you buy, you're not going to start really diving deeper.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. Like, I mean, I think it's difficult because it's so new, right? But what you just said hit me when I think, like, people buying stocks, like if you buy, well, I like the stock advice, like buy what you know, right? Like if you love Nike, you buy Nike. If you love Apple, you buy Apple. Like that makes the most sense for me. But doing any other thing, you know, like, oh, I'm buying this pharma company, something, or this physics, blah, blah, whatever, whatever company, you don't know how they work. You don't know who these people are. You don't know their product development, R&D process. You don't know their operational excellence. Like, you know nothing about this company, right? And there's so much influence internally and externally on this company that you will never be able to fully grasp it, right? Yeah, maybe there are some full-time stock traders that only do that day in, day out to figure out, like, okay, how does a certain company work? And then they buy a stock, right? But that's not for normal people. I would argue that understanding Bitcoin is way easier than understanding, you know, any company that has stocks on the NASDAQ.
Yeah, I agree. There's people who dedicate their entire lives just researching one company, right? And they still don't they still don't understand everything, right? And if you think about it, you obviously do the research, but Bitcoin isn't going to change. There's no cash flows. There's no product being produced. There's no, the company's not going to suddenly start supporting certain things that people don't like. It's not a company, right? It's a commodity. It's something that everybody can own. Anybody can own it. Anybody can, they can spend it. They can use it. They can use it as a store of value. As long as you have a cell phone, you can access Bitcoin. I've seen the comparison to a global ETF. Bitcoin is a global ETF. That's exactly what it is, right? Bitcoin is, you can almost think of it as representing the entire global economy, right? Everybody can sell goods on Bitcoin. They can receive Bitcoin for it. As more goods are available on the Bitcoin economy, the value will increase. Value will accrue with the people who hold Bitcoin over time, right? As more people enter the economy, over the last few months, there are some bigger companies that are joining. Ferrari actually said, oh, we're going to accept Bitcoin for our cars now. As you keep going, as you keep getting more and more companies coming in, people are going to be able to spend their Bitcoin directly. People are worrying, hey, I'm going to have to pay taxes at some point. At some point, I don't think that's going to be the case, right? I think at some point, all these governments are going to be working on behalf of Bitcoiners, right? When you look at it, I think I went on a complete different tangent, but if you think about it, all these governments are going to be benefiting Bitcoiners, right? Because they know that these Bitcoiners can leave their country with their wealth. Real estate investors can't.
Yes. Yeah, I talked about this with Tony yesterday. This is the thing. Like, it will like align the incentives better, right? Yeah. I listened to a Dutch podcast where they talked about like an old king of Belgium, or I think it was him. It was an old king in England actually, who like introduced taxes, and it started when he wanted to battle like the French somewhere, or something like that. But it started when he proposed plans that he wanted to execute, right? Like to defend a certain part of land against the French because they are a threat to us, etc. And that is why I need money from you, my citizens, basically. And so it was a plan, and then he asked for money, and then, you know, people gave money. But now people give money without even knowing the plans, right? And sometimes there's taxes, for example, on plastic uses on fruit or something. And the income from those taxes are not used to get rid of the plastic on fruits. No. You know, they get put in another pot somewhere to spend on some other subject, right? So the incentives are misaligned. Like it should be that the government works for the people. It's not that the people work for the government, which is now the case. right? Because they get money without proving which value they add, right? And I like this other example as well. Like yesterday, I think there was news about these suicide nets on the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. It took like, I don't know, 20 years and millions of billions of dollars or something to do something. Like it's just so misaligned. But once the power of the money, right? I think you said it well, like if the economy of Bitcoin gets bigger and more goods and services are traded for Bitcoin, that will give power back to the people, and the government will have to be more responsible about why they should get Bitcoin from the citizens to actually execute on, you know, whatever plan they want to execute on. So I really like that line of thought, and it's also, I think, what Peter Dunworth shares a lot. He said that he has like this crazy 7 billion or something per Bitcoin price target, but it's really very simple. He says if all the global trade fights every day, you know, daily global trade fights for the issuance of new Bitcoin that day, then that is $7 billion per Bitcoin, which, you know, is probably pretty far away, but it is in line with what you just mentioned, right? Because if and when people understand that Bitcoin is the best money to ever exist, then why would you want anything else for your goods or services to get paid in, right? So
I think
that's
even
for me, a very logical argument.
I think even based on what he's saying, I mean, it makes sense, right? Because if you think about it, the value in, I mean, I'm assuming he's saying that in nominal terms, but I mean, even if he was saying mm-hmm. it in real terms, maybe we'll have so much more prosperity, right? Maybe there'll be so many more things available for people to buy, right? Technology is going to improve. We're not going to be spending all our money on houses. So we're going to be worrying more about how do I improve my health? There's probably going to be things in the economy that exist that will be purely to help people sustain a better life, right? I mean, if you think about it, I speak to a lot of Bitcoiners just regularly. I've noticed that a lot of them like to spend money on high quality food, right?
Mm-hmm.
It shows you what their preference is. It shows you that they want, they don't care about immediate gratification. They don't care about being able to. A lot of people say, "Hey, on a lot of my posts, a lot of my comments are saying, "Hey, because I used to post about legacy financial assets." A lot of people say, "Hey, who's paying you to post this?" There's no CEO to pay me, right? There's no marketing.
And you're helping yourself.
I'm helping myself exactly,
and others.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I have an incentive. I educate people about Bitcoin and I make money from it. That's my incentive, right? My incentive is helping people, but my goal is to add more value. I think that's what a lot of entrepreneurs are going to do on a Bitcoin standard. A lot of people are going to be creating things that never existed. Think about how many ideas exist, and these people are stuck working at Amazon, Walmart, Google. They're doing what those companies want, but their ideas are just going to waste, right? I personally know so many people who think of crazy ideas and they sound awesome, but they don't have the time to execute on them, right? So,
well, and not the right incentive.
Yeah, yeah. On a Bitcoin standard, that's the thing. They'll have the time to execute because they don't have to worry about working 60 hours a week at a job they hate.
Yeah, now, I fully agree. I tweeted this week, I think fiat money incentivizes short-term consumption and Bitcoin incentivizes long-term building. And I think that's exactly what you're saying, right? And
mm-hmm.
that is also, I love that, that's what Save Dean also says in his book, right? Short-term time preference and long-term time preference. The fact that the money that you use right now, the fiat money that you use right now, is deliberately devalued at least 2% a year, which the people in charge agree to is an arbitrary number, right? And in reality, it's way higher now. I spoke to friends who live in New York. They say they say inflation is 6%. It's more 50 at the grocery store. You know, the fact that that is happening right now incentivizes you to do all this crazy stuff and gambling to try to at least mitigate that devaluation of the money that you have. But with Bitcoin, it's going to stay the same. And once it, swallows up all this monetary premium from stocks and houses, etc., the value will also go up. But the whole point is that the value stays the same over space and time towards the future. And that is what creates the incentive for long-term building, exactly as you just said. Like, if you know that your money is still worth the same in 10 years, then you will also choose to spend 10 years on some crazy project that you otherwise would never spend time on.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, I think this is going to spark a lot of innovation, right? If you think about it, a lot of companies are creating products that it's planned obsolescence, right? It's planned destruction of value. Like, if you think about it, Apple and Samsung have both been sued for creating phones that intentionally break, right? They stop working, their battery just dies, right? They've both been sued. I mean, if you think about it, are they going to be doing this on a Bitcoin standard? Because they know that their reputation is everything, right? They're the only two that can survive, there's no competition, right? I mean, on a Bitcoin standard, it's going to be free market capitalism. So companies anywhere in the world can create phones. Instead of having to rely on the US regulations, anybody can create a phone. Anybody can create a product that can work. And something will go crazy, right? All these companies, if you think about it, people say, hey, Apple is the best stock ever. I think it'll be disrupted because of Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin will make it so that the market is free. I think Bitcoin will make it so that these companies have true competition around the world, right? Right now, regulations save them. I don't think that's going to be the case in 5-10 years. I think all these companies are going to be revalued significantly. They're going to be completely repriced. They're going to lose 99. They've lost 99.9% of their value. They're going to lose another 99.9% of their value.
Hmm. Yeah, I find it fascinating. I think next to the videos on TikTok and Instagram about, you know, people not getting putting ends meet, a lot of people also talk about quality of products, right? And when you were just talking, I was thinking about I have a son who had like Lego, Playmobil, and stuff like Duplo, like the little building blocks, right? I bought new stuff for him, like current stuff. But I also had my old stuff from 30 years ago, which was better, which was more sturdy, which is what, like, the stuff now is way lighter. It feels very cheap. Actually, one block broke. You know, like, it's funny to see that the quality, well, it's not actually funny. It's interesting, you know, that the quality of products is just degrading. Also on purpose, you know, the companies are also incentivized to do this, right? Maybe it's not that malicious as how it sometimes sounds, but they are incentivized to do that. And that's the whole point, to align and create better incentives for people to build with a more long-term vision. I mean, I live in an old house, more than 100 years old. I have crazy woodwork in this house. Like, there are no straight lines, you know, like someone who made a door didn't make a straight door. Like, he made it nice.
Yeah.
His incentive was to make it nice, right? And if you buy a new house now, your door is going to be cheap wood, super straight, nothing nice.
Yeah.
Right? And that is, I think, the whole point about where we could go with Bitcoin also.
I think Saifedean talks about that in the Bitcoin standard. He talks about how art is trash now. It's true, right? If you think about it, all the music that you hear on the radio, all these hits,
short-term hits.
There's nothing. There's nothing. You don't listen. You don't hear those songs again after a couple replays. Those songs have no value, right? Like with old music. Like, let's say I used to really like Nas hip hop music. His rap songs. He would tell a story in a lot of his songs. J. Cole tells a story. Their music it has a lot of replay value. Like the new stuff, it's just wow. If you try to listen to it, it kind of hurts your ears.
Yeah, it's ephemeral, right? Like, that's what the whole media became, just ephemeral, short-term satisfaction.
Easy money.
And nothing. Yeah, exactly. Easy money. But it's also because the people allow it, obviously, right?
And
I mean, it gets consumed. But again, that is kind of like the whole point, to talk about that, right? Like you can get this short-term satisfaction, but that does not increase the value of your life. Mm-hmm. You know, you can argue that it actually decreases the value of your life because you don't know what you want, because every new shiny thing gives you a little dopamine, you know, whatever you're into. But that is an endless pursuit of nothingness.
Yeah, nothingness, exactly.
Yeah. So you got into Bitcoin, but what was a belief that made you not get into it when you first encountered it?
I think I first heard about Bitcoin in 2010, and I ignored it because I was like, oh, this is too difficult. I wanted to actually mine in my basement with my computer. I was like 17, 18 years old then. Maybe 16. I think I was younger. I wanted to mine in my basement, but I was just thinking, hey, this is too complicated. Screw it. I'm not gonna waste my time on this. I'd rather spend my time getting an education and getting a job the way that everybody tells me to. That's what I thought, right? And that was in 2010, 2011. Then 2013, I was in university and I was going through my exams and I was thinking, hey, this job is going to make me a lot more money than this Bitcoin crap, this Ponzi scheme, garbage, whatever it is, right? And then I think it was 2017, I started a new job, same thing. My job is too difficult. I'm not going to waste my time on Bitcoin. This job is going to get me a much better career over the long term. And then 2021, I think 2020 or 2021, I started learning about Bitcoin, like really learning about it. That actually happened because of somebody I met at work. This guy at work, he was telling me, hey, you need to learn about this thing. This thing is going to change the world. I'm so happy that I listened to him with an open mind, right? Before that, I had a closed mind. I was thinking, no, the way that I know things should go is how it should go. That's the only way that I know. I'm not going to pursue a new path, right? Mm-hmm. After I started learning about Bitcoin, after I started listening to podcasts, started really figuring things out, I left my job, right? In 2021, I left my job.
Wow.
I went from somebody who wanted a pension, being able to earn a certain amount of money every single year. My bank is going to pay for my expenses. I'm going to just stay here for the rest of my life. Went from that to somebody who I don't work for a company anymore, right? I mean, it's hard. It's actually much more difficult working for yourself than it is working for for a business, right? I mean, I think that kind of pushed me more into learning about Bitcoin, because I think right now, adding value isn't receiving the compensation that it should, right? I think a lot of people, okay, so let's say I do these live webinars teaching about Bitcoin. I can charge $30 for them and I can do perfectly fine. But if I just kept that $30, that $30 is going to lose value. It's going to be worthless, right?
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you realize, hey, if I exchange my cash flow to Bitcoin, I'm probably going to make a lot more. I'm going to have to add the value up front. And then over time, my Bitcoin is going to rise a lot more than my business can, right? I think a lot of people are going to come to that conclusion. That's the conclusion that I came to. Over the last maybe 3 months, I think something finally clicked. Before that, I was just struggling. I was thinking, hey, no, stocks and real estate are the best way to go. Bitcoin is
so interesting. I saw that change.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
I saw Bitcoin that change in your tweets.
Yeah, yeah, it's funny. Crazy, man. Like when you see it, it's true. When you see it, you can't unsee it. And most people are going to continue to say that it's a Ponzi scheme. Most people haven't put in the time to understand how it works, right? So they're never going to get it. They're going to wait until, I have a feeling most people are going to ignore this until it hits at least $1 million.
Well, to talk about that, I actually had one question for you, because I saw you retweeted someone who was talking about like the 60 million millionaires in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only 21 million Bitcoin, but a lot are lost, actually, right? So it's probably more like 17 million. You know, let's talk about that. There's 60 million millionaires in the world. And if any millionaires are listening, like, why should they get into Bitcoin?
Well, I mean, if you're a millionaire, it's because you probably have assets, right? You have either stocks, you have real estate, you have bonds, you have something in the legacy financial system that increased in value exponentially over time, right? I don't think that's going to continue, right? There's people, I actually have a lot of people who are constantly telling me, hey, real estate is going to continue to perform the way that it has over the last few years. If you think about it, if real estate prices keep going up 5, 10, 15%, an entry-level home is going to be $10 million in a few years, right?
Yeah, who's going to buy
it? Who's going to be able to buy that, right? What's the rent? Yeah. How much rental income do you even need to sustain that? Mm. Right? Like, it doesn't make any sense. At this point, it doesn't make any sense. So if you think about it, why not put just a little tiny amount of money in your portfolio, allocate it to Bitcoin, right? You don't have to go all in. You don't have to do what I did. I actually sold all my stocks and I bought Bitcoin. I don't tell anybody to do that. Even my wife. My wife, she buys Bitcoin, but she hasn't caught on yet. I mean, she's getting there. She's slowly going to get there. And I don't blame her for it. The fact that she bought Bitcoin, she opened her mind and she bought Bitcoin. That puts her ahead of the crowd, right? I think a lot of people are going to see that. If you're a millionaire, right now Bitcoin costs $45,000. That's 4.5% of your portfolio. If you can't put 4.5% of your portfolio into something that can potentially be worth so much more, it's like insurance, right? If you can't buy insurance, you're putting yourself in a situation where one bad catastrophe can just kill you, right? It can destroy you, right? Yeah. You have nothing.
So that's not even about Bitcoin.
It's not even about what
your portfolio currently is.
It's about
right?
protection,
that,
right?
That means you have a shaky
portfolio. Exactly. If you don't have, I think at this point, if you don't have Bitcoin, your portfolio is at risk of going to zero.
Mm.
Right.
And so, but also when the price goes up, right? And let's say we hit $100,000 this year, then it's 10%.
Yeah.
Of that 1 million, and that is a way bigger also mental hurdle, I'd say, to get over for people. So I really like what British HODL shares a lot about as well, like this price, it is gonna go up, you know, doesn't matter at which pace, but as long as you stay dormant, it will slowly walk away from you. And yeah, the decision to actually allocate a portion of your wealth,
and you don't need to go all in.
Yeah.
You don't need to go buy one Bitcoin, right? You can buy fractions, yeah, right? I think that's the thing that most people don't understand. Most people who are buying stocks, buying real estate, they think, hey, I can buy fractional shares. I don't have $50,000 to buy a Bitcoin. You don't have to, right? You can buy fractional units. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised how many people don't understand that, right? Whenever I talk about that, there are so many people who say, hey, I had no idea. Now I can finally start buying even $5-$10 worth of Bitcoin every day if I want to.
Yeah. So to emphasize for the people listening, you don't need to buy one Bitcoin. Yeah. You can, one Bitcoin is divided by 100 million units called sats. So you can buy one one-hundred-millionth of a Bitcoin and divisible by that. So you can buy any amount of Bitcoin that you want when you decide to allocate some. All right. I have three more questions. I saw you tweeted, if a financial advisor doesn't understand how Bitcoin works, you should not trust their advice. Can you elaborate on that a bit?
I think that a lot of people who are financial advisors right now, they're going based on education that they got 20, 15, 20, 30 years ago. Right? When I did the CFA, there was no such thing as Bitcoin, right? I had to go out of my way. Oh, well, there was Bitcoin. Bitcoin was there, but I didn't know about it. It was out of my vision. I didn't even think of it as something that could make sense, right? So if you think about it, a lot of the financial advisors that are out there that are very successful today, they're probably a little older, right? Right? A majority of them are probably in their 40s, 50s, 60s. Maybe they haven't even thought about Bitcoin, right? So if you think about it, if they're not willing to do the research on their own field of expertise, why would you trust their advice?
Yeah, I agree.
That's it, right? If you don't understand Bitcoin,
well,
you pay them
to do that work. Right?
Exactly, you're paying them
1%
a year.
That's why you pay them.
Yeah, and if you think about it, you're paying them something like 30% of your portfolio returns to give you that advice over the next 30, 40 years. Right. If they can't put in the time to listen to a podcast here and there, or to learn about this, they can't read a book. Why are you paying them? Mm-hmm. What are you paying them for?
Yeah. Yeah, fully agree. Like, it's one of the things that I now do when I want to give people, you know, the quickest way to understand Bitcoin. I send them the Fidelity Digital Assets report. It's called Bitcoin Revisited. It's 23 pages. And it's great, like really good, you know, and that's just what I do. Like if this morning I had a discussion on Twitter again with some financial researcher who said Bitcoin was a Ponzi and like the tulips. And I said, okay, you know, I said a lot to him. Like I tried to give him some information, but then I just point him to this, like just read these 23 pages, right? And then those are probably the best, it's probably the best condensed like report that I've read about Bitcoin. You know, if you're like totally new and you don't have like the time to read all these, great Jeff Booth articles, for example, just read these 23 pages. And then, that should hopefully do it if you're you have an inquisitive mind, you know.
Yeah. But honestly, you don't even have to read it. A lot of people just don't want to read, right? You can listen to a podcast. There's a live reading of, no, sorry, not live, but it's somebody reading the bullish case for Bitcoin on YouTube.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Right? You can just listen to that. Listen to that on your way to work. Right. I've started sending that to people because I know a lot of people, they just...
Oh, that's great.
I think it works so well because you can just listen to it whenever you want to. It's an hour and 19 minutes. It's literally 79 minutes of your life. If you can't find 79 minutes of your life to learn about something that can potentially change your entire life, you're going to lose. Like you don't deserve to build wealth if you're not willing to sacrifice 79 minutes of your life to learn about something new, right? You don't deserve it. I mean, I didn't deserve it either. I paid. There's a great quote. You buy Bitcoin at the price you deserve. I bought Bitcoin at the price I deserved. I saw Bitcoin at $3,000 in 2020. I thought it was a scam. I lost out, right? I paid what I deserved. I mean, it's the truth. It's the reality of it. Whoever doesn't, if Bitcoin is $1 million tomorrow, once the ETFs are out, once all that stuff happens, if Bitcoin hits $1 million and you own no Bitcoin, you deserve that, right? You deserve to pay $10,000 for 0.01 Bitcoin, right? Because you're ignorant. You're not putting in the time. I get it. If you don't have the money for it, okay, that's fine. Put in $1.
It's not about that. It's about not being complacent in your own life, right? Yeah. Like thinking for yourself and... You know, if you can record a TikTok in your car sipping the $6 Starbucks complaining about that, you cannot make ends meet and like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
Then you can also put on a podcast while you drive home and start listening to that thing. Like it's that ethos in Bitcoin of doing the work. You know, I think it's not, I tweeted that today as well. Like understanding Bitcoin is definitely not about intelligence. Doesn't matter how high your IQ is. It's not about that. It's about being humble and recognizing that what you think you know is probably not true, what you believe is probably also wrong, which is definitely not a nice experience, but that will get you to the starting point, whatever the starting point is, right? Listening to that podcast or reading a report or reading a book, that doesn't really matter, but it's about understanding that you have to think for yourself and that you're currently influenced by third parties who do not care about you, as harsh as that sounds, right?
And it's really easy to see when somebody hasn't done the work, right?
Yes.
It's very easy to see.
Exactly.
It becomes very apparent as soon as they use the word tulip, Ponzi. Once they say those things, you know. Intrinsic value. Yeah. What else is there? Intrinsic value, tulip, Ponzi.
Let's keep it at that. But yeah, I fully agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or I rather use money backed by the government.
Yes, there you go. It's like not backed by the government, or governments can ban it.
Yeah, exactly. I also saw you tweet or retweet something about, you know, the volatility of Bitcoin and risk. You know, lots of people use the volatility of Bitcoin as an argument against owning it. But you say volatility does not equal risk. Why is that?
So volatility is just the increase and decrease in price, right? Risk is the chance of loss. If you understand both, if you understand volatility, if you understand where your asset can go, you need to make sure that you buy your assets with the right time horizon, right? If you're buying Bitcoin with a 6-month time horizon, you're going to lose your money, right? Volatility is going to kill you. But if you have a long time horizon, you're not supposed to buy assets with a 60-day time horizon anyways, right? There's no stock, no real estate. You can't buy any investment with a 60-day time horizon, right? There's if even the people who are losing money on real estate right now, if they hold for another 10, 15 years, they'll probably end up making money in terms of US dollars, right? But right now they're losing $500,000-$600,000. Does that make real estate risky? Does that make it, does that make you go broke? Does real estate, is real estate a terrible asset? No, it's not. You have to think about that for Bitcoin as well, right? If you're holding Bitcoin with a 1 month time horizon, you're going to lose money, right? Bitcoin, for all we know, tomorrow it could drop 50%. Right, if ETFs are rejected, maybe people will do something crazy. They'll sell their coins. I don't think that's going to happen, but if that's the case, lots of liquidity is going to leave the market. People are going to be uninterested. Leveraged positions are going to get destroyed. So, of course, short term you could lose a lot of money, but long term, if you think 4, 5, 6 years in the future, you're always going to make money with Bitcoin because of the way that the asset is created, the way it's issued, right? The issuance is decreasing over time, right? And that 4 years is historically where the price turns back up, where cycles start. It's because all of the, during that, so in Bitcoin in general, there's a 2 year up where the price goes up, and then 2 years where the price goes down. The reason why the price goes down is because all of the crap is being washed out, right? FTX should not have been there. Right. If it was the legacy financial system, FTX would be surviving until this day. Right.
Yep.
That's
a great point, actually. This is the whole point. The whole point is you can only profit from Bitcoin when you follow the rules of Bitcoin. Yes. Right. And if you try to mess with it, if you try to exploit it in whatever way possible, your paper Bitcoin derivatives, leverage, all these things, that will go very badly for you. And that is the entire point of why Bitcoin is so transparent and has a set of rules that will not be changed, right? Because in the other system where the rules are changed constantly and also, you know, on different levels for different people, the closer you are to the money spigot, the more you profit from it.
Yeah.
You know, that is where that game does work and is played,
yeah,
right? But in Bitcoin, it's just, it's not possible. And it's a good thought. Like every cycle, there are parties who try to play Bitcoin.
Yeah.
But they fail at it because, if you don't follow the rules, you will not benefit from it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you think about it, even the money spigot comment that you made, I think that has to be explained. So a lot of people don't realize that to be closer to the money spigot, you need to borrow money, right? They don't get it because nobody thinks of it that way, right? If you think about it, you can borrow $500,000 to buy a house. You can do that overnight. But if you wanted to earn that money, it'll take you 5-10 years, right? So if you're closer to the money spigot, basically what you're doing is you're getting access to money as soon as possible. You're buying things that are scarce and you're pushing their price.
Borrowing from the future.
Exactly. You're borrowing from your future self, right? That's what people don't really see. They don't understand. When you don't understand that, schools don't teach that. We don't learn that in school. When you don't understand that, you can't take advantage of the system. You can't make the system work for you, right? That's the thing. Yeah. This current system is based on debt. It's based on people borrowing from their future self, taking their happiness from later and bringing it to today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I once got an argument on Bitcoin against me on Twitter of a guy who said the value of fiat money comes from the promise of the repayment of the debt. And then I said, dude, he was he worked at the central bank, actually.
Oh, no.
And I said, dude, that doesn't make, and it's not rational. It's not a rational, you cannot build on that. Like if you really think that that is what you build upon. And also this comment goes for normal people because if the people on the money creation level, right, the bank level, if they don't repay the debts, then the government will step in, they will save them, and eventually who pays for those debts are the citizens, right?
Yeah.
Are the normal people. So it's very disingenuous, actually, to say that the value of the money you have comes from the promise of someone else repaying the debt for which that money was created. It's so disingenuous. It's crazy to think actually that some people actually believe that.
And there's probably financial advisors out there who actually agree with that, right? They think, okay, yeah, this is the reason why your portfolio is going to outperform because of this, this, and this. But all those facts are wrong.
Yeah, I agree. All right, last question. I ask everyone the same. What is a core belief that you will never let go?
Oh, that's a good question. I've heard people answering this question before, but I haven't thought of it myself. I think over the long term, adding value, creating value will always trump everything else, right? Creating true value will trump everything else. And people will know, right? I mean, if you're not putting in the work, people will know. Like it's like with us, for example, when a Bitcoiner talks to somebody who doesn't understand Bitcoin, they haven't put in the work, they haven't created value, they won't understand Bitcoin. And it becomes very apparent right away. Even if you, like, let's say social media, if somebody buys fake followers, you know for a fact that they have fake followers because their engagement is trash, right? Everything takes time to build. Everything that's worth having takes time to build. If you're not putting in that time, you're not going to get what you want, right? I think that's something that that's a belief that I'm going to hold on to forever. I think the fiat currency system has made people believe otherwise. I don't think that that's how it should work. I don't think that that's the way things actually play out for people. People think, hey, if I buy fake followers, my social people will recognize me. People will see me as somebody who's truly adding value. But that's not how it works. You have to actually put in the work, right? If you don't put in the work, you're not gonna get anywhere.
Yeah, I love that, man. Thanks for sharing. And yeah, thanks so much for coming on. I really enjoyed this conversation. I'll make sure to link to, your Twitter newsletter, your Linktree. I think your handle everywhere is Rajat Soni Finance.
Yes.
So people can find you easily online. And I'll keep following your thoughts and tweets with interest and hope to do this again in the future. So,
of course. Thanks so much. I enjoyed this a lot. Great conversation.
Me too. Thanks, man. Cheers. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, it would be amazing if you could rate, review, and subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. It will help us educate more millennials on the importance of Bitcoin. You can follow and connect with me on Twitter. I'm Bramk, that's at BRAMK. And if you are or know someone who has an interesting perspective on Bitcoin that's worth sharing, hit me up. I read and reply to every single message. I appreciate your support and hope you'll be here for the next episode. Thanks for listening. Bye.